Johnny and Josh podcast for the Season 6 World Series review show. Now, our lineup is almost as good as the series proved to be, as I'm joined by British Baseball Hall of Famer Josh the Grinder Chetwin and the Tommy Lasorda, at least physically, of the management team, Eric the Producer Jansen. Big Davey Lankell, unfortunately, is literally missing in action in Toronto, probably crying in some bar with a host of Blue Jays fans. What a series, what a game, what an end to a season. Heartbreak for Toronto, heartbreak for the whole country of Canada. It seems like the whole country was behind them. And I'm going to give you, Eric, the first shout. As a Canadian, how heartbreaking a result was that?
Very.
Good.
But for the nonpartisans, top 10 World Series. I mean, think about it.
Top five World Series.
Pinch hit grand slam, two extra inning games, two extra inning home runs, a walk-off homer, a 4-7 double play. You had Yamamoto doing things we hadn't seen. You had, I know we're going to talk about you, Savage. I mean, it was crazy. It was just everything about that World Series was pitch perfect for a fan.
What do you think the odds were on the Blue Jays winning once they'd won game five? So we're going back to Toronto. They only need one win from two games. The odds must have been off the charts in their favor. I mean, even Dodger fans on one of my WhatsApp groups were saying, we're done. There's no way we can win both games in Toronto.
Well, I mean, it was throughout that whole series. I saw a win probability throughout the final game seven. At one point, the Dodgers had a 9% chance to win. The Blue Jays, 91% favorites in that game. I mean, there were so many moments where you thought, oh, this is over. And I got to be honest with you, Gouldie, that the Blue Jays were the best team. I mean, you could not, as an impartial fan, you could not help but love the Blue Jays. They didn't strike out a lot. They played incredible defense. They had timely pitching, everything. Yeah. But baseball's a weird game, and things happen. And the Dodgers really took advantage of all of these small little quirks in the game, and it really worked in their favor.
And we're obviously going to get into it in some detail later in the show, but I just want to read to you guys a tweet that I picked up, and I loved this. As heartbreaking as it is, the 2025 Blue Jays were perhaps the most likable and exciting team this city has ever produced. Runs like this spawn a generation of fans, and it was an unforgettable summer and fall, and we're grateful for it. I thought that was beautiful. That summed it up perfectly for me, that even in heartbreak, there is so much to like about this team. JC, how true are those words? Will this spawn such a significant spurt of interest in not just Toronto, but perhaps the whole of Canada?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Canada has a great baseball history. I mean, you look at the first baseman for the Dodgers, Freddie Freeman, guy grew up playing baseball. I mean, there's so many great examples of great Canadian baseball players. But it's nice to reignite this love for baseball through the one team that is playing in that country. So the 92-93 championships were amazing. The Cito Gaston teams, you know, Joe Carter hitting the walk-off game-winning home run. They do have a history of this excitement. But again, I think you're right, Johnny. This is such a lovable team, and I alluded to it before. They played baseball right. You know, the defense was fantastic. They struck out less than any other team. I'm one of the really great strikeout to contact ratios all throughout the season, and then brought that into the playoffs. It's just a really fun team, and I think that, you know, if they can get their pitching tweaked a little higher, that lineup is, you know, got a lot of depth to it. I mean, when Jimenez is being graded out of the nine hole, you know this is a team with depth.
Jesse, given your childhood, the fact that you've spent a lot of your life in LA, I assume, even though you're a Red Sox fan, you were rooting for the Dodgers.
I had a hard time with this one, I got to tell you, Gouldie. I'll tell you the reason that I was kind of a little bit Dodger faithful on this one was Clayton Kershaw. I liked the idea of him going out a champion. He had already made that commitment that he was going to retire. He got that one big out in the 18 inning game, so he was a part of this World Series. I don't know, there was something about that kind of got me excited.
But it wasn't he warming up in the bullpen, I believe, in that 11th inning in game seven, just in case they did get the tying run and it went into further extra innings? He was warming up, wasn't he, Eric?
The story's even better than that, which is he was warming up and he thought that they got the outs, but the run scored. So he thought he was still going to have to pitch. He didn't realize they had won. It wasn't until Josh Bard, the bullpen catcher, said to him, hey, Kershaw, we won this, that he actually realized they had won it. So he didn't have that, you have that. I've been lucky enough to win a few championships, that moment of anticipation where you know you're about to win and then you jump in for the dog pile. And he didn't get that moment. He had a moment back from that. So it was even more fun.
Okay, boys, we've got so much to discuss, so let's move this thing on. Okay, everybody, this is obviously the last episode of Series 6, with the World Series now coming to a close, but we still want you to get involved. Obviously, if you see at the bottom of the screen, there's the opportunity to subscribe and to like. We're on YouTube. Obviously, if you could big us up on social media, the more people are listening in, and we know for a fact that there's still a very significant hardcore love of this game in the United Kingdom, and we're here for you guys each and every time. So this show is going to be basically all about going over our seven key moments from this, what it can only be considered a seven game epic World Series. But first, we've got Eric with the World Series trivia.
Yes, we do. And our last trivia of the season. Now, I'm going to keep it World Series based. And I'm going to keep it John Schneider kind of connected based. If you just stick with me. Now, John Schneider, 45 years of age. Had he won the World Series, that's, he would not have been the youngest manager to have won a World Series. But so my question to you is, which of these four managers since the year 2000, I'm going all the way back to 2000, to which of these four managers is the youngest to have ever managed a team to a World Series victory?
Okay.
All right. So is it A, Alex Cora? Or is it B, Joe Girardi?
Okay.
Or is it C, Ozzie Guillen? Or is it D, AJ Hinch? Four options there. So once again, since the year 2000, which of those managers is actually the youngest to have actually won the World Series as manager? So
What was the second one again? I'm writing
Alex
them down
Cora,
just so I know.
is Alex Cora, Joe Girardi,
Joe Girardi, okay.
Ozzie Guillen, or AJ
Yep,
Hinch?
and AJ Hinch, okay. Okay.
Answer later on in the show.
Think this is going to be a wild guess for me. Okay, moving on. Right, first batter up. Right, let's get to our seven World Series talking points of this 2025 Fall Classic, and it was a classic. Before we get into what our own personal favorite moments are, let's focus, guys, on what is the obvious moments that everybody's talking about. Key moment number one, first batter, Shohei's roller coaster. The big question, is he human after all? If you look at, well, first of all, his NLCS MVP performance is extraordinary, probably one of the greatest games, if not the greatest performance in postseason baseball, where he was the starting pitcher, struck out 10, hits three home runs, does it from both aspects of the game. Amazing. But did he then run out of the steam? Because and this is a question I've been dying to ask you, JC. When that massive 18 inning game, was it the right decision to start him in game four when you consider how knackered he must have been? I think because he played all 18 innings, I'm right in saying, yeah? And
He
they
did.
walked him about 14. Well, he got walked something like seven times. So I'm assuming he must have played pretty much the whole game. And given he was starting the next night, would it not have made more sense to have taken him out and replaced him, knowing that you need him fresh the next day? Because definitely his performance the next day, I think it was six innings, six strikeouts, four earned runs. I mean, it's not bad, but by his incredible standards, it's
Well,
pretty, pretty low
misleading
for
as
us.
well too, right? He gave up two earned runs, and then there were two inherited runs that scored afterwards.
Right.
So he gave up the four runs, but he really only gave up
But
two,
my
and
point
then he
is, do
inherited
you
it.
think he was knackered? Because
Look,
that's
look.
how he came across to me. And he is only human. Of course, he's going to be exhausted after an 18 game, 18 inning game.
Two factors on that. Factor number one is, we're not privy to the conversations that he has with Dave Roberts, and it's so easy to look in hindsight. The second factor is he was going to play that next game anyway. So he was going to be knackered in the lineup anyway, to the extent that he would be knackered. Do I think that there was a conversation about this issue between Ohtani and Roberts and other members of staff? I would say most likely. And my guess is that Ohtani knew how he felt. He was able to sort of articulate that. And one of the things that is really important, I think, when you get into the playoffs for managers is to listen to your players, and to then
parse whether it's real or not real. So, because players always say, I can do this, I can do this. You know, Yamamoto obviously said he could pitch on 0 days rest. So my guess is that Ohtani said, look, you know, I can do this. I feel fine. I'm going to be playing in this game anyway, to the extent that I'm tired as much as any other time. It wasn't like in the game in which went 18 innings, he was throwing and playing the field. So, you know, there were other people who were probably more tired. So, you know, all's well that ends well for the Dodgers. And he did pitch reasonably well in that game.
Okay,
With good, with.
put yourself in Dave Roberts' shoes though. One, would you have taken him out early to rest him for game four? Or two, if you wanted to keep him in because you wanted to win the game, and I understand that, and obviously as a hitter, he gives you a great chance of winning the game, would you have pushed his start back to game five?
Definitely not on the first one. You've got to win the game. So he's your best hitter.
So
He
you
was on
keep him
form for
in.
that game. 100% keep him in. As for the second one, I would have talked to Ohtani. I would have read exactly where he felt he was at. I would assess how the analytics line up. And if I came to the right conclusion that he felt ready and that it looked like it wouldn't impact him, I would have gone with him. I'm not as bothered by that choice. And he pitched well.
So
So
yeah,
I
I
just
this the
I
wear
was
and tear, the
amazed.
wear and tear of Ohtani over 7 games, even saw in game seven, right? So Okay. like that, forget the fact that he had like how many at bats over the 7 game series, and then to Yeah. pitch twice and Well, game seven didn't exactly go well either.
no, it
What
didn't.
was it? 2.1 innings pitched, 5 hits, 3 Ks, 3 runs.
And he didn't have feel for anything in game seven, right? Like
Yeah.
you saw him trying to throw, you know, the slider, the curve. He was missing the zone consistently. I was surprised that Roberts kept him in for that final inning to give up the home run to Bichette. I think he labored so much in those 2 innings, I might
Yeah.
have considered taking him out after that. That
Yeah.
was because he just did not look himself in that game.
Okay, just to wind this whole conversation up, Eric, I want to ask you this. Ohtani is, without a shadow of a doubt, the greatest player of the modern era, possibly the greatest player ever. And I don't want to be seen to be popping holes, but is there a danger that such is his fame and his talent, and he seems like a really great guy, that some certain rules of baseball don't apply to him? So we know for a fact that the Blue Jays manager, John Schneider, was royally pissed off that he took 3 minutes to come out of the dugout. I think that was in game seven, and that he had like a five warm-up pitches, etc. That, you know, and the delay was deemed to be excessive, but no one was going to mention it because it was Ohtani. Are we in a danger zone here that we're treating him almost in a way that no one else gets treated because he is so good?
It is an Ohtani rule that was made just for Shohei, right? And here's the thing, like if he was on base when the inning ended, so he had to get, you know, get go and get ready, get into pitcher's mode, get off, get his shin pads off, and clear the mechanism, so to speak. And then he went into the dugout, did whatever he had to do, and then came out a minute later, a minute after his allowed time, and then you could see John Schneider, you know, indicating the umpires, like, what the hell? You know, it's like you're taking the piss here. And now you're gonna give him five warm-up pitches. Meanwhile, the batters are waiting on the on-deck circle for the inning to start, but Shohei is allowed to take his
Well,
sweet time.
JC, I mean, this is the sort of thing that teams adopt. You know, in a rugby game, when a team's got momentum, what does the opposition do? They try and slow it down. They try and slow the game down. Is this part and parcel? Is this something similar?
No, this is much ado about nothing. You know, the umpire has the discretion to do it. You don't want to rush a pitcher who's on base back. This would happen more often back, obviously, when there was a national league and pitchers would hit more regularly. But it's 3 minutes. You know, it's not 15 minutes. I just think, like, yeah, the rhythm changes slightly, but I don't think it was game changing. Quite honestly, he didn't pitch that well anyway. So, whatever you gave him an extra time, it didn't impact either team because the results sort of cut towards the Blue Jays anyway. So, I think this is one of those talking points for pundits.
Well, you know, I'm surprised they didn't award a ball, you know, to like, you know, the whole pitch clock thing. If you're late, you're late, and you know, award
But
a.
because, well, but that, Eric, is to Johnny's point, which is that's upsetting the rhythm once the game's back in play. So if you're slowing things down, that was the purpose of that rule, was to avoid that once the game got started. But this is between innings, and I think it's not the same thing.
And of course, it's a freak of nature because it is Shohei Ohtani, and you don't do it with any other player. So that's it. Moving on.
Okay. By the way, before the World Series started, he was odds on, short odds on to be MVP. Just thought you'd know.
More on that later.
Right. Moving on, key moment number two. The youngster, the legend that is Trey. Now I'm going to struggle with the name. Is it Yer Savage?
Correct.
Oh, there you go. Yer Savage. I mean, what a great name. I mean, it says everything about what a bulldog. I mean, I can't get over the story of this kid. Struck out 12. He allowed no walks on 104 pitches. This is in LA. Game five, all tied two apiece. You win this, you're going back to Toronto, only needing one win to win the World Series. He's a kid. He whiffed half the batters he faced at one point, striking out five consecutively. Wins the game for them big time. And yet, 5 months prior, he's 21 years old and he's pitching in low A ball. What a story, Josh.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, but this is the World Series. There is always a funhouse mirror distortion to the World Series. And what I mean by that is that things happen very differently because A, we have the big microscope on it, but B, it's these short series. And Yer Savage is a great player. He's not the first guy to kind of come out of nowhere in a World Series. And we've even seen it. The first World Series you and I did together in 2002, Francisco Rodriguez, right, F-Rod, came out of nowhere to be sort of a key bullpen piece for the Angels when they won the World Series that year. So, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that sort of funhouse mirror distortion because it impacts on a lot of different levels. But I think that helped sort of build the legend that is Yer Savage here. I mean, great outing. Often you get young players who you don't have a big book on, who come up to the major leagues, and you don't have a lot of video on. You can't really sort of suss out how good they can be. Who come out and have a great outing here and there doesn't necessarily mean they're always going to be that pitcher, but it means that it's right time, right place, and that was the case with him.
Eric, the stat that I think is off the charts with this kid and how well he played is that he earned just $57,000 this season. For the whole season, $57,000. And the fact that he gets promoted and he ends up playing such a crucial role in a World Series doesn't entitle him in any way, shape, or form to earn a shed load more.
Well, he did quote he was quoted saying, "I'm looking forward to that playoff bonus check."
So that he is in, he's eligible for
Yeah,
that. He's eligible for
there
that.
will be a
Okay,
bonus.
good. There will be
That's
a bonus.
voted
Okay.
on by the team, and it will be more than 57,000, most likely.
Yes.
Okay.
He'll be all
Now,
right. He'll be able to play the lucky bill.
let me ask you this, JC. How brave was it of the Blue Jays management to take the punt on him in the postseason, given that he posted a 3.63 ERA in six outings, four of which were starts for the Buffalo Bisons. That's Triple A. So once he'd got to the top of the whole minor league tree, I mean, those are decent numbers, but they're not lights out. They're not like, oh God, we got to get this kid in.
Well, I think that was more of a reflection of need rather than guts. Really, the starting pitching, I mean, you look at Max Scherzer and what he had done
Yeah.
in the run-up to the playoffs, you wouldn't have used him. It would have been like Kershaw last year with the Dodgers, where he threw poorly throughout most of the season, you would have been out. But the Blue Jays, it was the one weak spot was their starting pitching, right? They had strong bullpen, they had great lineup. The starting pitching was always going to be the question. And that's one of the reasons that they actually got to seven games was that Yer Savage helped bridge that gap. He was sort of the spackle for that. But I think it's less of that, hey, let's give a punt on this guy and more, what's our other option?
This is why I think is this series is so amazing, is that, as you rightly said, I mean, one story that any other year would have been the dominant story almost gets pushed aside because as soon as another game happens, something else happens that's equally as amazing. I mean, this kid was basically drafted out of college last year, and here he is potentially winning, having a performance in game five that should and could have won them the World Series anyway, and it didn't. So now he's yesterday's news. Is he going to be that good next season? Am I going to be picking him up in my fantasy baseball team? Or is he going to be an Ian Anderson, who, of course, was lights out in the postseason for the Braves? And now I don't know where he is. He's in exact single A, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that is the question, right? To my point is that you have a short series, you can put together a couple of good starts. I think he has a chance to be good, but really the crucible for young pitchers is that first full season because you have to start modifying the way you play as lineups start to understand what the best aspects of your game are. And that is the dance you do early in your career. There are very few pitchers who could just show up in the major leagues and dominate with their stuff, and everyone knows what that stuff is. So that'll be the question. But I mean, there were a number of players. Addison Barger, I mean, had an amazing postseason, right?
Yeah.
And Jimenez had a great postseason. Whether that's going to carry over, especially with a guy like Barger, Ernie Clement, he set the record for postseason hits, and he was kind of an average player. Whether that is a reflection of who they'll be next year, really stands to reason.
Okay. Well, one guy who has proven that he can do it over a full regular season, let alone into the postseason, is the man we're focusing on in key moment number
RS3.
three, who was, of course, voted MVP of the World Series. Yoshinobu
Yamamoto.
Yamamoto. It's a right old
What are you,
mouthful.
Paul
It's
Merson? What is
shocking.
this? This is embarrassing, Goldie. Yamamoto.
Yamamoto. There you go. Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Fabulous. What a performance. Unreal to come out after what he'd done in game six. And I think his pitch count was up around the mid 30s by the time the game was won. So we're talking about, a third of another start just to make that last couple of three outs to win the World Series.
So there are many different ways to be a great pitcher, right? Like some, yeah, I think of like Tim Lincecum. You guys remember Tim Lincecum,
Worst
who had
freak.
just this really funky release to get everything out of his body. There are a lot of other different ways that he pitch, but what Yamamoto has that made him so prime to have this amazing World Series experience is he has flawless mechanics. And what does that mean? So, the way his body mechanics are, he takes less pressure on his body. He's able to throw in a way in which he does not tax his arm in a way that someone like a Lincecum would tax his arm, the way numerous other pitchers do who have some mechanical flaws but figure out a way to get the best out of them. He has absolutely 100% perfect mechanics. And that's the reason why he was able to come back. He also takes great care of himself. He also, really good at the biomechanic, preparation, but it's his mechanics that made this the situation that he had because he didn't tax his body so hard that he couldn't continue to come back. And that was sort of the special factor and the reason why he's a special pitcher.
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be I'm going d totally down a different route next season because I had such a terrible fantasy baseball season. Sorry to drag it in, boys,
Yeah,
but
moving
he's
on.
going to be my number one
Had to
choice.
happen.
He's my number one. I'm going pitcher first, which no one ever does. I've been told never to do, and my pitching always stinks. So this year, next year, I'm changing my whole style, and he is my number one target. I'm selling you now. You've heard it first. Right, moving on. Key moment number four. This one. It's not going to be a moment that we're all agreed upon. It's a one that we've offered to our dear friend David. I mentioned at the top of the show, big Davy Lane girl has gone missing in action in Toronto. He was covering the World Series. He was actually there for Game 7, covering the whole thing for The Guardian, and he sent us this report.
Hey guys, you know where I am. CN Tower, Rogers Center. So less than 24 hours ago, I was here and we were in the press box. So I was in the alternative press box, the auxiliary press box, high in left field. And there was that moment.
Bases loaded, one away. Varsho. Roller to second. Rojas comes home.
And Kiner Falefa is deemed out.
Question is going to be, did Will Smith have his spike on the plate or not in time?
The call is confirmed.
They
the runner is out.
The call. Two outs in the ninth inning.
Thrown out at the plate. And we thought for a second, we all looked at each other like, wait a minute. Is the World Series going to end on a replay review? That happens in Manhattan, in Chelsea, at Major League Baseball's offices by an umpire. Is that how this World Series is going to end? On a replay reversal call? We all looked at each other and we were like, holy shit. I can't believe this is even possible. And for me, that was like the quintessential moment of this World Series where we thought that was actually plausible and it could happen. Other than that, I would say just, this is my 11th World Series that I've been to in person. And probably the most fun being at this game seven, such an incredible matchup. And just kind of, I don't know if it's because I'm a little bit older, kind of taking it all in, watching the Dodgers in Toronto just prepare for game seven before the game, doing their stretches, batting practice, taking ground balls, the systems that they do, that they use to warm up for a game. I just stood there for like an hour and a half and just watched and really enjoyed it. and an unforgettable World Series. Jays fans won't like how it ended. But for baseball fans, for neutrals, it's hard to imagine it getting any better. So, Josh, Johnny, Eric, back to you.
And it's a good point made, and a fascinating point made. JC, the idea of a World Series being won on a replay. And, of course, Kainerfelefa, as it turns out, was ruled out correctly. And yet it was so damn close, it could have gone either way. What an extraordinary end to what was already an extraordinary series.
Oh, yeah. We live in the age of technology. I think it would have been a darn shame for it not to end on the field and for it to end in, as David pointed out, in New York with someone rewinding, fast forward, rewinding, fast forward over and over again. So I feel bad for Blue Jays fans, but I think it was a more just result. It was the accurate result, too. So,
well, you can't argue with technology. As much as people hate VAR and all the other versions of it and all the other different world sports, I think if we want to get into a bigger argument, JC, is it fair to say that we're in danger of going too far with our search for accuracy and using technology to that end?
I used to feel that way, right? The big discussion was, should we have robot umpires?
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I was like, no, it's part of the beauty of the game. It's part of just sort of the mystique. They make mistakes, you know, 5% of the time. I've kind of come a little bit as we move deeper into the world of technology to the place where let's get it right. You know, let's actually now, maybe it's time for us to start. The technology is strong enough. It's good enough that maybe we move that way.
But Eric, the argument is not so much that, you know, I don't think anybody wants it not to be right. But if in pursuit of getting it right, and this is certainly true in rugby, you know, you have these endless delays, particularly in football, where, you know, off he goes to the monitor, etc. Where you've got, like, after a goal is scored, you don't know if you can celebrate because you don't know if it's going to count. If that undermines the actual enjoyment of the game, is that not the priority over getting it right? Which is a fair point that JC makes.
And just to have everyone standing around at the Rogers Center, both dugouts, umpires, fans, and as David said, everyone in the press box is like waiting for the final call from New York. If we're like, well, is this, are we, we're, you know, do you, will this be the winning moment? And then waiting for everyone to jump for joy or get ready for extra innings. I mean, I can imagine what the tension was in that stadium.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate situation. But just to counter your argument, Johnny, I think one of the most enjoyable moments in tennis is Hawkeye, is when, is it in, is it out? And then they go to the screen and they show it. It actually adds to the tension and the drama of that.
I agree with that. But then that's because it's really quick. You just show Hawkeye, bang, decision.
Well,
done.
That's what I'm talking about, robo-umps for that.
Stage. But imagine if match point or championship point is relying on Hawkeye.
Yeah,
hey, but that's where we are now.
Yeah, but go back to the I can't remember if it was a perfect game or a no-hitter for the Detroit pitcher where they called
Galarraga.
Galarraga, where they called the runner safe and he was so clearly out. It just seemed like a true injustice to him. You know, what would have been the greatest moment in his career because you could have easily checked that out and solved that one.
One thing I want to add here about David, because I keep, he was messaging me a lot, because, and I've been in that press room many times in Toronto at the Rogers Center. He actually sent me a picture of his lunch that they have fine catering, may I say, at the Toronto press box. And of all times I've been there, he showed me a nice rack of ribs that he got. I was like, wait a minute, whenever I was there, they never served ribs. And that, so that would have been my highlight of the World Series.
I love this. We're talking about probably the greatest World Series of modern history, one of the greatest of all time. And all Eric's focusing on is how good was the food.
No, but the thing is, I know Kyle, the guy who runs the catering at in the Toronto press room, and he never offered.
Name dropper. Shameless name dropper. Players.
Kyle, the guy, the head of catering.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ooh, Eric, can I have your autograph? You know, Kyle, head of catering at Toronto. But yeah, I was never offered ribs, but that's, well, I've gone off piste. Moving on.
Okay, moving on. Right, key moment number 5. JC, it's your turn, my friend.
Okay, so one of my favorite things about World Series writ large is that there is always someone who comes out of the woodwork so obscure, not always, but often, so obscure that has their one moment, right? And we talked about Yusavage. He may have a great career, but there are certain players who probably this will be it. And I think of so many examples of this, right? Going back to 2018 with the Red Sox, you had Steve Pierce when he won the MVP, hitting a couple home runs in a game. You can go back to 92 with your Blue Jays. Well, no, not your Blue Jays, Eric, but you know, the Blue Jays, Pat Borders, who had an amazing series. One of my favorites of all time was 1978 when a guy named Brian Doyle, a career 161 hitter, hit over 400 to lead the Yankees to a World Series championship. He was replacing Willie Randolph. This series had a player of that level make a difference that really could have been the difference in the whole series, but we forget about it because it was early on. And that was Will Klein, who came in the 18 inning game, completely just there because the Dodgers bullpen had fallen apart, throws four scoreless innings to keep them in the game. They win that game. If they do not win that game, if Klein pitches like kind of the journeyman minor leaguer that he probably could be, and gives up a run, forget it, right? We never get to that game seven. So it was early in the series. I love the moment because I love the player getting his moment in the sun. It's just a reminder of baseball, what I love about the game, which is every player who makes it to the major leagues can have a moment of greatness. The difference between them and a good player and a great player is just the consistency of those moments. But that's what I love. And that's what was so special about Will Klein and his performance.
I agree with Josh. He's like, so many things have happened in this series that the next game just buried because of so many amazing things happens in the next game. In the next game, moments like the Will Klein moments gets buried and forgotten. And that Will Klein moment felt like a year ago already because of this series going the full seven. But well, here's some pretty good news as well. Let me just, because I know people at the Hockey Hall of Fame, but Eric, who cares if you know people at the Hall of Fame? What does that have to do with baseball? Because I also know one guy who works at the National, at Cooperstown, who had to collect all the artifacts from this World Series to put in Cooperstown. And one of them was Will Klein's glove from that 18-inning game. Also picked up from the World Series after Game 7 was Yamamoto's Game 7 cap, Will Smith's spikes from the go-ahead run in Game 7, Mookie Betts' final out glove, Dave Roberts' jersey, the base from the 18th inning Game 3 victory, Freddie Freeman's Game 3 walk-off home run bat, and Andrew Freeman's championship celebration shirt. So, yeah, there you go. That's all that stuff is going to be in Cooperstown, and as will Will Klein's glove.
Okay, we're going to move it on to key moment number six, which, by the way, guys, is the best moment because it's my moment. And I've chosen Game 6, ball stuck in the wall. Quick reminder for everybody. Blue Jays obviously seemed on the verge of another unbelievable, stunning comeback. This is Game 6 on Friday. They trail 3-1 in the ninth. I think Sasaki, the Dodgers closer, was in. He hit Toronto's leadoff batter, Alejandro Kirk, putting him on first, obviously. He was then replaced by the rather speedy Miles Straw, who I used to pick up on a regular basis, by the way, in fantasy baseball, just for stolen bases. That's another story. He obviously comes on as a pinch runner. Addison Barger comes in, laces a double to the left center field, and the ball lands at the bottom of the wall and momentarily wedged beneath it as the crowd went crazy and both the runners went all the way around to score. They think they've tied it up three apiece. The ball was declared dead and the play was declared a ground rule double. So Straw had to go back to third and Barger to second, and suddenly the tied ball game did not exist anymore. They were still trailing 3-1, and of course, as it turns out, the Dodgers got out of it and won the game to take it to Game 7. Now, boys, the reason why I picked this moment is just so many freaky things happened in this classic over the seven games. And this one's got to be the freakiest of the lot, because I've seen a photograph of where that ball got stuck in the wall. And it appears that that bottom corner of the padding, because obviously there's padding in those walls, because players are obviously running into them at pace, it looks damaged. It's slightly curled at the corner, which is exactly where the ball landed. Now, you could hit a billion baseballs, and I guarantee it'll never happen again. But it did happen. But if it hadn't been damaged, I don't think there's any way that ball gets stuck. And then you will get at least one run home and probably at least a double, if not a triple, from your other batter. So for me, it's not good enough just to be incredibly resilient and talented, which the Dodgers clearly are. You also need a bit of luck to win a World Series.
100% cool. I mean, that is sport in general. If anyone who's ever played sport, there's a lot of ego in sport, but if you are humbled by games and have won them and lost them, you know that there are moments like that that you feel fated by the sports gods, in this case, the baseball gods. And I agree, that was a crazy moment, as was the 7-4 double play. So, which something you never see after that. So, yeah, it was crazy. Really nuts. And great job by the outfielder not to touch the ball. You touch the ball, it's in play,
But
to
that's
raise your
interesting.
hands immediately.
Yeah, because I was watching the replay, and they were saying that that was a great shout on his part, not and turning around and asking for a calling. Because obviously, if you've got that wrong, both runners score and the game is tied. So that he obviously knows the rules. Because I didn't realize had he touched it, then it becomes invalid. Then it's a fair play, and it wouldn't be a ground rule double.
And in the heat of the moment, where you want to feel like, oh, I'm going to pick up this ball, turn around, and throw a frozen rope all the way home, a lot of players would probably lose their head a little bit. So,
100%. Yeah, as someone who feel, someone who has the nickname Johnny the Jinx, I feel for Blue Jays fans. And yes, I was rooting for the Blue Jays, if I'm honest. I really did want to see Toronto win. I just felt that the gods were very cruel on more than one occasion. More than one occasion.
And they were the better team, in my opinion. I mean, you look at their wins and then the ones the Dodgers squeezed out. I think the Blue Jays were the better team. The Dodgers, they've been there before. They just figured out
Knew how to
ways
win.
to do it. Yeah.
But they also had Lady Luck on their side.
For sure.
God's obviously a Dodger. Can you believe that? Okay, moving on. Right. Let's go to key moment number seven. Eric, you're up, big guy.
Lucky number seven. Now, here's my take as well. We were alluding it to it before, but yeah, it was this World Series pretty much united Canada and brought like the interest of baseball all across Canada up 100, 300%, from Nova Scotia to Prince Edward Island to Vancouver Island, all the way up to Nunavut. The entire nation was tuning in, record numbers. And now there's even talk about, like Manfred has been hinting, oh, we might be up to 32 teams. Expansion might be coming. There might be a Canadian city. And now, speaking about Canadian city, here's the thing. As a Montrealer, so if you so for those who don't know me, yes, I grew up in Montreal. I also was a Tigers fan because I lived in Toronto when I was a youth, but I, as by birthright, because of my Montreal, I'm supposed to hate everything about Toronto. If they're our rival city, sports and everything and culture. But I have a lot of friends in, that's why I became a Tigers fan, because I wanted to spite all my Toronto friends growing up for that brief period I was there. Then came back to Montreal. But now Montreal has no team anymore, as we all know. The Expos in 2004 became the Washington Nationals. And so for a Montrealer to root for the Blue Jays in this World Series was hard. It was bittersweet.
But you
But
did. But you did.
you did. Do you do it out of national pride? Yes. We've been devoid of baseball over 20 years in Montreal. A lot of friends and family, including my father, has now jumped on the Blue Jays bandwagon over the years, just because, A, he's primarily a baseball fan, and he absolutely fell in love with the Blue Jays this season. I was worried about his blood pressure during this 7-game series in his elderly age, but it's been a joy calling my dad and going over plays that happened the night before and talking in complete detail about certain aspects of the game, and friends and family who I never really connected with as much as I should have. I've now been I my WhatsApp's gone. It's going haywire with every game of this World Series.
So the 2025 Blue Jays have brought the Jansen family closer together and has brought Canada closer together.
It did indeed. It did indeed. And
It's a beautiful story, buddy.
now here and here's the just what timing as well. Now Netflix released just after game one, the Who Killed the Montreal Expos documentary. So it was very timely releasing that documentary with the only team in Canada in the World Series. I watched it. I think, in my opinion, it could have been better, but it was it hit. It, you know, it was for a Montrealer who's now an orphan of baseball. It's a must-see viewing. of how baseball can break your heart as well.
But am I right in saying that despite everything, that there are still certain parts of Canada that have allegiance to a North American team, to an American team? For instance, people from Vancouver tend to be Mariners fans because obviously Seattle's just down the coastline.
And that was a tough thing in the ALCS because there were a lot of Vancouver fans who, over the years, because Seattle is a hop, skip, and a jump across the border, there's a lot of Mariners fans in the Vancouver area. But then to see Toronto vying for a World Series success again, and the Mariners were in their way, it did split a lot of families and friends in Vancouver. It's like, wait a minute, are you Canadian or are you a Mariners fan? So
It's funny, everything that's happened politically, and this is not a podcast that ever goes down the political route, but everything that's happened politically, particularly the sense of the American president bullying Canada, it's great to see something like sport, like baseball, bringing the people of Canada together at a time when they really do need to be united. I think it's beautiful, even though
Absolutely.
they didn't win. I think it's a fantastic story.
And by the way, we used to rate the national anthems in the past when we were doing our Channel 4 Channel 5 shows. And I was disappointed with a lot of the national anthems that were sung this year. Some people didn't have the coverage that showed the national anthems, but for me, the winner was Game 7, Noah Reid, who was an actor in Schitt's Creek, great, a fine Canadian show. For me, he's the one who gets the who wins the award for best sung national anthem. He sang the Canadian.
But we should tip you our hat to this man, JC. Am I right in saying, Eric, that you watched every single one of those seven games live?
I did. And that's
You.
and that's why I look so disheveled and tired more than usual.
But Eric, you talk about this World Series uniting Canada. It also united British baseball fans, and you got to see a little bit of that as well too.
I got invited to one of the watch parties. So for Game 6, I went to Waterloo here in London and went to attended Steve Hunter did a, and George did a great job at organizing what was an unbelievable watch party. That there was about at least 200 people there, three of them Dodgers fans, the rest of them Blue Jays fans. Somehow all these Blue Jays fans descended upon the Passyunik Avenue Sports Bar in Waterloo, packed to the rafters watching live Game 6 baseball. Well done
Did they
to
stay open the whole time?
they stayed they had a license to stay open to the final out.
That
So
is awesome.
thank God they didn't have that 18 inning game, but yeah, it was well done to Passyunk Avenue for allowing British baseball fans to watch live baseball at a sports bar all together in unison.
I tip my hat. Who organized it?
I'll say Steve Hunter and George Martin, who's head of the Astros UK community, and
And is I mean the Astros UK community are really active and
oh
really
yeah,
good,
George is a
really
great guy.
passionate. No,
So shout out
massive
to
tip of the
George
hat to those
and
guys.
Steve.
Fantastic. Missed opportunity, JC. Surely this is something that should be organized officially. It's great that these guys got involved and got it sorted. But I sort of feel that if you're going to spread the word of the game, this is exactly the sort of thing that MLB should be organizing.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for us to say that too, as when we were on television, it probably brought a little bit more opportunity for people to get connected with the game because we were there in the UK. I hope that Major League Baseball, we lost the London series this year. It was the questions about whether it'll ever come back because of costs, because of collective bargaining agreements. But the fan base is just remarkable in the UK. It has been since, the early days of the Channel 5 show, and well before that, as a person who's been looked at the history of British baseball, there is legitimate support, and I hope that Major League Baseball continues to recognize that.
And I do want to say as well, guys, on a personal level, that there was a post that I don't even know made the original post, which was a photograph of you and me, JC, in our dicky bows for Game One of the World Series from God knows. I think it was it the Rockies?
Well,
I'm trying
seven,
to think who.
yeah. You and your tuxedos, yeah.
Both of us looking very young and very slim, JC, and some and there's it's been viewed a fair few times and some lovely, lovely comments. And I just want to tip my hat to everybody that's been kind enough to say some kind words, considering we went off air in 2008. So that is what,
Thank you for
17 years
remembering
ago.
us.
Yeah, that is, it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. And everybody that says something that kind, I mean, we do appreciate it. It's wonderful. Okay, right. That's it, guys. Thank you for that, Eric, that your special moment. And I know that was heart-wrenching for you to admit. We reached that stage of the evening, everybody. Seventh inning stretch time. And we're, even though this is a World Series show, we are going to do a baseball book of the week, Eric. Has it got a World Series theme?
There is lateral thinking in this, because if anybody was paying attention at the World Series and is Canadian, would have noticed that the frontman and singer of the rock group Rush, Geddie Lee, was at every game of the World Series. You could see him behind home plate wearing a Blue Jays cap. And Geddie Lee of Rush fame, he is an obsessed baseball fan. You do not understand how obsessed this man is. Now we all know him as, for me, by the way, as far as Rush, love him or hate him, I still say that Spirit Radio and Tom Sawyer are two classic tracks that you know that are that that belong.
Wrong.
Excuse me. And Neil Peart.
My dog started howling. Elvis, it's okay, buddy. Calm down.
Neil Peart of Rush fame, rest in peace, belongs in the Rush form of rock drummers. Anyways, Geddy Lee has come out with a book. And now not only has Geddy Lee come out with a book and is also baseball, and he's also got the most unbelievable collection of baseball memorabilia. He actually probably has just as much as Cooperstown. And he's come out with a book called 72 Stories by Geddy Lee. And what it is, it's a compendium of his collection of stuff that he's got over the years. If you go on YouTube, you can actually find an interview with him and Dan Rather. And Dan Rather goes over all his whole collection. He's got things like Walter Johnson's baseballs, and he's got like a whole bunch of perfect game baseballs. And go on.
I was going to say what makes him so special in my mind, Eric, is his connection to Negro League baseball and the way he connected to
that
it
too.
Very early on. And he had more signed baseballs from Negro League players and got it early enough where many of them were still alive, and then donated many of them to the Negro Baseball Hall of Fame. He has helped, you know, you have all that stuff that's great, but he has helped maintain baseball history for a part of baseball history that does not always get its due.
And here's the thing, do you know who is the biggest Rush fan in Major League Baseball? Randy Johnson. Now, when Randy Johnson retired from baseball, he toured with Rush as their official photographer, concert photographer for a year. So can you imagine that? Randy Johnson just, you know, taking up photography and being their official tour photographer.
He was a photographer going back to college. I once posted on Twitter X a picture of him from the USC photography club, and it's all these little people and then this one humongous human being, and it was hilarious with a little camera around his neck. He's a longtime photographer.
And that's the thing, there's a lot of, then Randy Johnson was, you know, with, and Geddy Lee are best friends, who, you know, just seeing those two together is like, how did that happen? Well, that's when music and baseball collide, that's, you have beautiful things. And don't ever diss Rush again, by the way.
Can I offer my 3 points here, boys?
Yes.
Okay. Geddy Lee, he's been a season ticket holder with the Blue Jays since 1979. That's pretty impressive. 46 years. He sung the national anthem at the 1993 All-Star Game. This man loves his baseball. And this is the best trivia fact of all. His birthday, same as mine, 29th of July. How about that?
Wow, so not the same year, because then he'd be really old.
No, he's a tad older, mate. He's a tad older, but only just.
But yes, so there's my book recommendation, Geddy Lee, 72 Stories. Find it on Amazon, find it on your local bookstore, hopefully.
Sounds like a must
read as a perfect coffee table book, just in time for Christmas.
Okay, so I'm assuming that we're sticking with the Blue Jays theme with our baseball cultural reference, or are we? Are we going down the Dodger route?
No, we're going to go Blue Jays. But now, for those who were tuning in during the World Series, you would have heard their fight song, which is "Let's Go, Okay, Blue Jays, Let's play ball." Now they played this ad nauseum, during the World Series. Well, they played ad nauseum during the entire season in the Rogers Center. It was recorded in 1983, this song, OK Blue Jays. They decided to call it OK Blue Jays because back then they were just OK. They didn't want to call them Super Blue Jays because they were just an OK team.
I'm surprised it isn't sorry, eh? We're the Blue Jays, you know?
Yeah. So for those of you, I'm only going to play a tiny snippet because I will admit it is a god awful song. For those who missed it, it sounds something like this.
Bring on a White Sox. Bring on a Bo Sox. Bring on the Brewers, the Rangers, and the Yankees, too. We'll beat the Indians. We'll beat the Tigers. We'll beat the A's so bad. Gonna make Billy blue. What do you want? Let's play ball.
Well, hey,
that's what I say. Is that the best you can do, Toronto? You know, that was recording 83. Time's moved on. Time to record a new song.
But here, there's a theme here. Rush, no good. No good. Canada, like, play Tragically Hip or like a really good Canadian band. Come on. You're better.
Get a leader record a new song, you know, for them. You know, it's like but then again, some people say it's so bad is good. It's like changing the theme song to match of the day. You would never do that ever, you know, but because it's stuck in time.
It's a classic track.
It's a classic. You know, people, Toronto fans are saying, okay, Blue Jays is actually a classic trend written by the Bat Boys, by the way. I'm just trying to, you know, it's just like anything that can help the Blue Jays move on from okay, Blue Jays, or, you know, let's face it, there aren't that many good baseball songs out there, as the show, you know, has proven.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right, JC, hopefully you've got something slightly more entertaining to offer as we continue on to our very last House of Cards, courtesy of JC.
So fun here, Eric, there is a song connection to my player from the House of Cards, from Josh's House of Cards. I will get to that in 1 minute because I want to take a moment to talk about this set. As you guys know, I choose pre-war baseball card sets that I like to highlight and then choose one card to really focus on. And of all the sets I've done, you know, there are ones that I really like, the 33 Gowdy set, the T206 set. This one I'm going to do today is my number one favorite set. Now, I would recommend that if you ever wanted to get really cool art baseball cards, this is the one to do it. It's the 1934 to 1936 Diamond Stars set. I'm going to show you three all-star players, cards I have, just to give you a sense of it. I really just love the illustrations. This is Earl Averill, famous player who played with the Detroit Tigers. They have like a big, you know, sort of advertisement in the background. It's my least favorite of the three. This is Al Lopez, who is a famous manager. He was a catcher before that. It has a real Art Deco feel to it. You got the flags in the background, the player looking at the ball in full catcher's gear. My all-time favorite card was of Little Poison, Lloyd Wehner. I just think it's just a really cool designed card. It just has this really...
How do you pronounce his surname?
Lloyd Wehner. Lloyd and Paul Wehner were great players for the Pittsburgh Pirates in the 1920s into the 30s. They were the team that lost the 27 Yankees. He's probably one of the worst players ever to make the Hall of Fame. Whole different story behind that. But I love his card. He's stretching for a ball. The colors are really cool. But the player I'm going to talk about is actually this man right here. And you can see the other cards are action shots. This shot is a sort of, you know, portrait of a player by the name of Van Lingo Mungo, one of the best names ever in baseball.
Wow,
Van Lingo
what a
Mungo.
Name.
So let me tell you a little bit about Van Lingo Mungo. He was a rabble rouser. My favorite line about him is he played for the Dodgers, so appropriate here, for over a decade. Played for Casey Stengel. Casey Stengel quipped about him, "We get along. I tell him what I want to happen, and then I duck." He was that kind of like just always getting a fight. They went and did spring training in Cuba before the Fidel Castro years. Apparently, he was found in bed with some married woman. They had to sneak him out to the seaplane so that the man with the machete wouldn't come and kill him. So he was a really kind of crazy player. He was also a five-time All-Star, threw with a lot of velocity for that era. The only reason that he is famous now, despite five All-Star games, is because he was the name of one of the greatest baseball songs of all time, surprisingly one that Eric has not mentioned, in the 1970s. It was called Van Lingo Mungo. It was written by a guy named Dave Fishburne.
And it sounds something like this.
Van Lingo Mungo, Frenchy Bordagaray, Phil Cavaretta, George McQuinn, Howard Pollett, and Early Wynn, Roy Campanella, Van Lingo Mungo.
So you hear the song, and it was considered one of the greater jazz songs of the 1970s. Fishburne said he just chose Van Lingo Mungo to be the name of the song. And they list a bunch of other names in the song, as you heard, because it was just such a strange and fun and whimsical name. My favorite story around the song and Van Lingo Mungo and Fishburne was that they went on one of the most popular talk shows in the United States in the 1970s, the Dick Cavett Show. And before they were about to go on, Van Lingo Mungo, again, was always the rabble rouser, said, "Hey, do I get any money for this, you know, because my name is the name of the song?" Said Dave Fishburne says to him, "No, you don't. But if you write a song about Dave Fishburne, then you'll make yourself some money." So it was the ultimate wonderful put down. But Van Lingo Mungo, this song is in the Baseball Hall of Fame in the National Baseball Library. And he is remembered for time immemorial for his great name, more so than his pitching and his rabble rousing.
Guys, there's so much to love about this sport, whether it be the food, Eric, your personal favorite, whether it be the great World Series, the great players. One thing I love is just the names, baseball names. This, I mean, Mickey Mantle, what a great name. Freddie Freeman, there's loads of alliteration. Chipper Jones, so unforgettable. But now we got Van Lingo Mungo. I mean, Shoeless Joe Jackson. I mean, these are great names. Is this unique to baseball? Because I think the best I could come up with in football is Chopper Harris. I can't think of anybody in rugby that stands out as being particularly special. What is it about baseball, JC?
I mean, I like, particularly in this era, the nicknames too. There was a Smokey Burgess, Three Fingers Mordecai Brown. Like, when you throw in the nicknames, it really also adds to the greatness.
Daffy Dean.
Yeah, Dean and Daffy Dean and
Dizzy Dean.
Trivia. Let's get the trivia answer. Come on, Eric. What do we got?
Yes. Earlier, I asked you, since 2000, who was the youngest manager to have won the World Series?
Yeah.
Do you remember the options I gave you?
Yes. Alex Cora, Joe Girardi, Ozzie Guillen, or A.J. Hinch.
So which of those four managers have gone on to be the youngest manager to win a World Series since the year 2000.
John Engelhardt. Explain my logic. I'll go first, JC, because you obviously know the answer. Okay. I am going to explain my logic. I don't have a clue. Okay. That's my logic. Secondly, because I don't have a clue, how can I logically work out which is the correct answer? You're never going to put the right name first. So Alex Cora is not the answer. You're never going to put the right name last. So AJ Hinch is not the right answer. You're going to hide the right answer in the middle. So it's either Joe Girardi or Ozzie Guillen. And I'm going with Ozzie Guillen.
Okay.
That's my logic.
I'm going to give you one option because there are four guesses here. I'm giving you an option to change your answer if you want.
Well, what, this is the orange game with
no, this is great.
Sean Lark and Jimmy Carr.
It's the last show. It's the last show.
I'm sticking with my answer. I'm not moving. If I'm wrong, I'm going to be proud to be wrong. JC, tell me what the right answer is.
Be proud to be wrong, Goldie. It's
thank you.
Neither the first nor the last. So. I mean, there are two that are very close. I know it's not Joe Girardi. He played at the university I played at. I know his age difference to when he actually played to when he was managing. The two closest are AJ Hinch and Alex Cora. And I'm pretty sure it's Alex Cora. Probably very close, though. So if it's AJ Hinch, I will be bummed.
Well, you're not even going to mention Ozzie. You're not even going to give him a, you know, it's definitely not. I mean, at least mention him. Don't humiliate me by saying he's not even worthy of mentioning, even though you said he's the right answer.
So it's either AJ Hitch or Alex Cora. I'm going with Alex Cora.
Okay.
Oh, please don't be Alex Cora. Please don't be the first name you mentioned. That makes no logical sense. You're trying to hide the answer. You would never go first. No normal, sane human being would put the right answer first, Eric. Put me out of my misery.
Okay.
What's the right answer?
I'm going to go. Okay. Like, okay. Now, Alex Cora.
Yes.
Was 43 years old.
Okay. Pretty impressive. I'm writing this down.
Joe Girardi.
Yeah.
Was 44 years old.
Oh, okay.
AJ Aussie. Hinch was 42 years old.
Oh, ooh. So JC's wrong as well. Fantastic. And Ozzy was 21.
Ozzy Guillen was
come 40, on, Ozzy!
41 years old.
Oh, Goldie!
Save the best for last, eh, Johnny?
And you're only as good as your last game, JC, so I know more about baseball than you do. It's official.
Enjoy it, Goldie. I'm happy for you.
You're the Miguel Rojas of trivia. How's that?
I love that.
The Will Clyde.
I love that. You but see my logic, JC. He hides the answers. He's not going to gift it. It's not going to go. You know.
Okay, Goldie.
Who's the greatest ever British baseball
pundit? We set you up for a win here, buddy.
I'm over the moon, guys. I'm over the moon. And I'm gutted because I'm now going to do that whole thing at the end of the show saying, you know, look at the bottom, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, we're on it all. Get involved, like, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your grandma. And the reason I hate doing this is not because I'm begging you to give us some exposure, but it means I've got to say goodbye to my baseball brothers. Boys, the season has come to an end. I cannot believe it's finished on such a high. I'm going to miss it. It's the usual story. We're all going to be waiting for spring training in March. But what are you going to be doing? What are you doing for Christmas? What are you doing other than calling me once a month? What are you going to be doing, JC?
You know, I do my curling. So I will definitely, right in the middle of the season right now, I have a number of trips for curling. Going to visit my family in Los Angeles for Christmas.
Awesome.
Yep.
Are you going to be buying World Series champions T-shirts for everybody? Is that the idea?
No, I don't do that.
Eric, you're off to an NHL game, no doubt.
I'll be working on maybe I'll take off my baseball cap and get into ice hockey mode, Champions Hockey League across Europe, and then get ready for the World Baseball Classic, which is in 123 days from now.
Are you working on that, Eric?
I'm hoping. That's awesome. I'm hoping. Okay. So I'll be back in.
Let's
MLB game development next year and all that, but we'll see if I can get.
Can we start a petition to get Eric a gig?
Do you want me to make a call? I know people. I can make a couple of phone calls.
No, no,
they have nothing to do with baseball, but you do know people.
Exactly.
So we're coming back. I mean, is that happening? Are we making an announcement, Goldie? Oh, look at you guys!
I'm coming back. I've been pushing, even if I'm on my own.
Eric is willing to come back.
You know, we'll see.
We got him on air.
We need
official.
We need a purpose in life, don't we?
Show him the
Should
love.
We JC come back? Should there. We come back one more season? Let us know. And
that's so thirsty to ask that, though. Please tell us.
Why change the habits of a lifetime, JC?
Give me your three answers. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, by the way, boys, I went to the Chelsea Spurs game. My dear friend Mark Anson, who's a director, invites me every year. Amazing experience. Took Tommy with me. Chelsea, of course, 1-0. Yeah. And working the director's box was a lovely young man called Russell, who promised he's going to listen to this podcast. He was a hardcore Channel 5 baseball fan. Came up. He reminded me, you're a Braves fan. So his memory of the show and everything that we did, lovely, lovely young man, said he absolutely loved it. And he came up to me. He said, you're Johnny Gould. I mean, let's face it, that doesn't happen, let alone ever. So,
doesn't
big
happen
shout
to people,
out to Russell.
People on
are
the
very
island,
small.
Which
small
means he must be over 30.
Old.
Russell must be over 30.
You know what? He was, I mean, looking good for his age. I think he was in his 40s.
We always used to joke, right? Our viewership on that show were either drunk people coming back from the pub, night watchmen, or, you know, mothers who were, you know,
breastfeeding.
Their
yes, go on.
And
you can say it.
Those babies now have their own babies. So, exactly. You know, that's what's scary.
Love you, baseball brothers. Thank you for
love
being
you,
with us.
Well, stay
we
in
love
touch.
you, Big Dave. Yeah, absolutely. Big wave to Big Dave. We missed him, but thanks for his input from Toronto. To all our listeners, to all you baseball crazies, we love you, whether you're hardcore, softcore. We just love the fact that you love your baseball and you're still listening in to the Johnny and Josh podcast. Till next season, guys, keep it round. I don't know where I'm going with this. Have a grand slam year. We love you. Bye-bye.
Keep it round?
I'm waiting with the keep it, my lord.
Oh, I love it. No, I'm going to keep it. It's funny. It's my leg. I like it.